My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It is me, Darren Hupke, introducing himself a second time. Thanks for joining the show. Thanks for coming back another week. It's been fun. Some fresh new guests, some returning guests. It's been a good mix these last few weeks. This week, we have a longtime returning guest. Is that a thing? It's just a person who's been on the show a lot. So would I say long-time returning guest? I don't know. I'm going to say it. Long-time returning guest, Andrew Elmore, is back on the show. He is answering a question that's only been answered once, but technically I recorded this before Rusty answered it on his episode. But we discussed some of our favorite artists or designers behind the scenes in video games. It was a really cool and informing conversation. So it was really, you know, just to learn about somebody neat that I did not actually have an awareness of before the conversation. So listen in, check it out, and see what you think of the episode. Business as usual, pixelsandpolygons.net, patreon.com/Darren Hupke. Those are the two sites where you can get physical and digital copies of my books and zines. The recently released Beat 'Em Up Volume 1 is available in both hardcover, softcover, and digital formats. Retro Game Zine, the latest issue, features Mario Tennis. We have guest contributors in that issue are Sean Douglas and Dave Jackson from Tales from the Backlog and Kirby Conversations. Well, I attributed like those two podcasts to Dave, but Sean does Kirby Conversations, Dave does Tales from the Backlog. Both two great shows, two great podcasters, and Sean obviously is part of the Soundstone Network with his show, so some great synergy coming into printed form. So check out that issue and read all about their personal stories behind Mario Tennis and get some game history and have some fun there. Still working on 32-bit library, the greatest hits volume. I am in the InDesign phase, so I'm literally like doing layouts and putting the writing that I've completed onto the pages, plugging in the screenshots, adding in the comments, and all the visual touches to the book. So that is coming together. So I will definitely be having that by the end of the year, printed and everything. Anyway, that's my goal. So I continue to work on that. Also, my Patreon has gotten retooled a bit. So there's always been a $5 tier. That tier gets you a physical mailed postcard with a retro review on it, as well as free digital copies of Retro Game Zine each month. But I've added a $1 tier, just for that simple support, so you don't have to go too crazy and commit $5 or more a month. But that $1 tier lets you get early access to the episodes, so you could be listening to this a week early. And also there is a community chat where you can share your own submitted questions to be used in future episodes for the icebreaker questions for guests. So I do have a big master list I pull from, but I figured why not shake it up and have some community engagement. And, if y'all have some fun questions you want to ask, I can ask those questions on your behalf and give you a shout out and your name read on the episodes. So that only takes a dollar, but anybody in the dollar or $5 tier can get that perk with their paid Patreon contribution. So appreciate y'all for those of you who already signed up and submit your questions. I really am looking forward to getting some new ones out there. Otherwise, I think that's it. Retro Game Zine, 32-bit library, the Beat 'Em Up book, Patreon updates. Yeah, Follow me on Blue Sky. Follow Pixels and Polygons on Blue Sky. Tell friends. Rate and review the podcast. Anything and everything that helps spread the word and gets it in front of other folks goes a long way, so I appreciate that. But otherwise, I'm going to leave you there. That's enough. Enough rambling up the front. After the break and the ad, you'll get the conversation with Andrew this week, and come back again next week with another new episode. Thanks, y'all. Have a good week.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooley, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am the host of the show, Darren Hupke. I had to throw host in there. We've got the applause sign is now dimming for the audience. They're settling down. They're not mic'd up, but they're here. We have a returning guest, friend of the show, Andrew Elmore, again calling us from the Elmore Zone. Hello. Welcome, Andrew. How are you?
I am holding together. How you doing?
I am also doing the same. We are living lives in 2025 America. It is 2025, right? It's not 2026.
I don't know anymore. Who cares?
Yeah, it's whatever we are in. It is 2025. I don't know why I like literally lost it here for a second. Welcome back to the show. It's always fun having you on and having fun conversations. Last time you were on was minutes ago, but the listeners don't know that. But you kind of shared some updates on some of the projects you've been working on. I'll have links in the show notes as well to your Blue Sky and your YouTube channel as well that people can find. But what is a game that is in your backlog that you want to that's at the top of your backlog? What's that game you want to play next, looking backwards on, not looking forward on?
I keep looking at a copy of Tokyo Xanadu EX Plus, whatever the heck it's called, on Switch, that is sitting on top of a stack in the living room that I need to get to at some point. On the recommendation of one Mark Normandin, but it's I keep looking at that and I'm like, oh wait, no, I need to go back and finish my Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance run through first, and then I'm like, oh, but I don't have the time or energy to sit down and remember where I, and, you know, just jump back into an RPG that you're like 60 hours into, you're like, go back and finish. And so I just keep running into brick walls that I've placed for myself, but that one is currently on top of the stack, at least.
That's funny. I have a Persona 3 Reload, that re-release of that version of it, anyway, that I've got 40 or 50 hours into it, you know, maybe even more. And then, like, some new game came out, and like, hey, I'll come back to you. And then I did come back to it for a little while, and another new game came out, and I was like, hey, I'll come back to you. And, like, I've tried to train myself to, like finish the game and roll credits before you move on to that next thing, and somehow that's broken through my semi-recent healthy habit of not, like, you know, leaving games unfinished and unloved and everything. So, like, I need to jump on and play that. But I've been playing nothing but these stupid Picross. How do you even pronounce that? You know, picture, yeah, you crossword. Got it. Yeah. And then I discovered that, you know, it's been essentially one primary developer, Jupiter, who made like a ton of those on the Super NES and or the Super Famicom. And I've played a bunch of those. And then eventually I was like feeling so guilty that I was just playing this like Miyu Mini, like in bed, like, you know, like my hands are cramping, like looking at this tiny screen to like fill out these puzzles. I'm like, there's got to be another one on a semi more modern console I have access to. Like, let me see. And literally, Jupiter made some game on the PS4. It's called like Logi Art Grimoire or something. But it's exactly the same thing, just more puzzles to solve and everything. And for now, it's been like 6 weeks where the only video games I've played are these Jupiter developed Picross games. And eventually, I'll play. I don't want to say a real video game because they're real video games, but eventually I'll break out of that stupid hold that I have on me and either finish Persona 3 or move on to something new. That Tony Hawk 3 and 4 game comes out soon.
Oh, that's and right.
I'm probably going to play that too. I don't know.
The thing that broke me for Picross was Picross 3D. Because then after that, I just wanted all Picross to be 3D. And it wasn't. And so I never really went back into non-3D Picross ever again.
There's just something like, I don't know, there's just something about it. I'm just like, all right, one more puzzle. One more board. And then I'm just like, it's the same like logic. Like, okay, if this has to stretch to here, then it has to go to at least here so I can fill this in here. And it's like, I'm literally doing the same mental math like over and over again. But it's got to be healthy. It's got to be doing something for my brain, you know? Maybe sure, I'm smarter. But my eyes are probably getting worse from that stupid Miyu mini screen, like just staring at that tiny little thing, you know? But
that's why you got two of them. You got backup.
Backup Miyu mini or backup eyes?
Eyes.
Oh, yeah. I do have two eyes. That's true. All right, let's keep burning this one out. Let's get into it. Let's do some this or that's, and then I've got another icebreaker for you. Does that sound good?
Hit me.
All right. Xbox 360 or PS3?
Oh, man. Lately, I'm going to say PS3.
Lately, okay. Mario Tennis or Mario Golf?
Mario Golf, I played on. Played the Camelot RPG on Game Boy Color. And I don't think I've ever played a Mario Tennis.
Yeah, Tennis also has that nice little RPG mode as well.
Yeah.
The action RPG or strategy RPG?
I guess it depends on what we mean by action RPG. Because for some people that means like Nier Automata, and for some people it means Diablo.
Sure. You mean it however you want to mean it, and then pick one.
Okay, I'm just going to say strategy RPG because that's easier. I'll have to think about it. Cause be like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Front Mission, Tactics Ogre, Sucker to Tyson. Sure, it's good stuff.
Animal Crossing or Elden Ring?
Elden Ring.
I think I've asked you this before, but let's see. Yeah, I think I have asked you this before. Ninja Gaiden or Shinobi?
Right, because I think I was like, oh, 2D or 3D? And you were like, yes. And I was like, oh, no.
Well, now that we have new entries in both series coming soon, like does that tilt the scales at all?
I'm not particularly super interested in either of them yet. I don't know, we'll see what they, you know, are like after they come out, but
Ninja Gaiden's getting both a 2D and a 3D new game, right?
Yeah. Is it? I don't remember.
I thought there was like, I mean, there was that Shinobi.
There's a new
2D
Shinobi that I think is a search action joint, right?
Yeah. That's what it looks like anyway from his trailer.
Strider kind of.
Yeah, exactly. That. It looks just like that. And but then I swear
and then they put
that
out another bad version of Ninja Gaiden 2, and then 4 has what's left of Platinum on it. So I'm probably gonna swerve that one pretty hard. So I don't have super high expectations necessarily on the end product.
Yeah, there's a Ninja Gaiden 4, and then Ninja Gaiden Ragebound, which is the .emu published Game Kitchen developed spinoff. So you can get two more Ninja Gaiden games of various styles.
Keep an eye on that, I guess. I don't know.
All right, so Andrew won't be keeping an eye on that. That's fine.
I at least have one to go look into now.
Sure. That's something then. Sure. Let's do one last one. We'll say PlayStation or Saturn.
Saturn.
Mm-hmm. You are. It's true. Okay, there we go. We did the this or that's, and now we'll move into the icebreaker. This one maybe it'll be come right to you. Maybe it'll take a little bit of thinking. I'm not sure. Let's see. But do you have a favorite, or you know, it could be just a top, like a mini game or game within a game you can think about?
Ooh, I did like that Queen's Blood pretty recently. with FF7
That one, yep.
Rebirth? What? It, so they're like, what the hell did they call it now?
Yeah, Rebirth.
Yeah, yeah. I've never touched an in-game card game before, but it forced me to exactly once, and I was like, fine! And begrudgingly, immediately fell in love with it. Although, granted, part of that is because the just unassailable jam that they use for the music in that game is...
Mm.
A pulse pounder.
Mm-hmm. But, I thought for sure I was smart to like, oh, they're gonna call the third one Final Fantasy VII Reunion, like that's it, locked in, I got this, like I'm calling it now, I'm gonna be so right.
That too, and then I remembered that I had just played through that Crisis Core remaster.
Yeah, and they called it like, Crisis Core Reunion. I was like, oh well, yeah, now they can't reuse that again, dang it, what are they gonna call it now?
I have no idea.
That would have been it though, and they lost it, they burned it on that Crisis Core re-release. They could have called that something else.
They could have. I did like that, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not to slander on its quality or anything, but I just think for the arc of that story, that everything that there is, Reunion would have the nice period on that sentence there. And
the amount of, like, extras in the, you know, characters that have barely voice lines, is mumbling, wandering around, muttering the words Reunion, Reunion, Reunion over and over. You would think that that might be what that's working towards, but...
We're not Square Enix employees, so
it's true.
We don't get to make those decisions, not yet anyway. Oh, I don't think they're ever gonna hire me, so screw them to hell. But I'll buy their games. We will move into the main. I like Square Enix. I don't want to make any bad blood here, you know. So I regret everything I just said. You know, let me be the first to apologize.
You were really big into their whole their NFT push a couple years ago. I remember.
Give me all the NFTs I can get. You know,
listening to this is gonna not understand that this is a joke.
So I got them right next to my NBA Top Shot. The NBA got into NFTs for a little while there with moments that you could have owned somehow.
Ah, yeah, that's how that works.
Yep, yep. People own them somehow, apparently.
They said so.
I was going to say something there, and then we finally did it out of my brain.
You're very welcome.
Oh, I was going to say something about NX. Dragon Quest Heroes, Rocket Slime.
Yeah, baby.
That's a great game. That's what I was going to say. I was going to tie it back into just being a great video game that's just everyone should play. It's on the DS. That's so good. How awesome would that be to have a nice little widescreen up, you know, like a new maybe hand-drawn maps or something like that, but just kind of repackage that same thing for us again and let us enjoy it all over again. I'd take that today.
You could HD 2D a Rocket Slime. They may have saved them, right? I think
we only got one here in North America, I think. And if I'm wrong... Please correct me so I can go acquire those now and play
Somebody localized those bad boys. That first game, at least, was I don't think I, like, finished it or anything, but I remember having a lot of fun with it.
I have, I somehow decided to never sell that original copy I have, because it has my save file with, like, all the stats and playtime and all that stuff. For some reason, it had a ridiculous, like, menu where you could see your in-game stats. And, so I saved that. It's in a box in my garage, along with a copy of Advance Wars Dual Strike, because that also had a ridiculous number of stats and playtime and moves and everything you've done. I'm like, nope, this is all me. I got to make sure nobody else owns this, and only I have access to this data, so I will keep this, even though I don't have a working DS at the moment.
Yeah, I feel bad, man. I've got somebody's old copy of Portrait of Ruin, where they just went through and 100%ed everything. Like, they put, like, dozens of thousands of hours into that game, and it's I don't know who they were. Whoever you are out there, I didn't delete your save, it's still there. I'm not gonna go unlock all that shit myself. Are you kidding me?
It's just yours now.
Yeah, it's I own this save here. Look at this digital receipt that burned an ocean. All right.
let's jump into the main question. So this will be cool. This is probably gonna be another one of those classic Elmore bits. We're probably just gonna sit back and listen and learn about something rad and cool that you probably never even knew of before. But who are some of your favorite gaming artists or designers? You know, what was some of your work that they've done, and kind of what makes it special and stand out to you? But yeah, Andrew, I know you have like a designer you kind of wanted to shout out and call out and maybe bringing to the attention of everyone listening. I'm curious to see who that is.
Yes. So I got into game dev by way of graphic design, and I got into graphic design by way of video games. I think playing If I were to like plot a path of like games that I encountered that set me on a career trajectory over the years, it's like there's a string there through the early 2000s of like Halo, Jet Set Radio Future, Wipeout Pure, and a couple other things on like PSP and stuff. Res HD on 360, I think, was when that got released, and then stuff like Luminous and et cetera, et cetera. There were a bunch of games coming out around that era that just were aesthetically pushing things in ways that I hadn't considered. And it wasn't until much, much later that I realized, like, oh, that's a thing you can do. Like, that somebody made that stuff. Somebody had to, like, go through and do that. but I didn't necessarily know how to... I don't know. I had been working, you know, as a graphic designer professionally for some years before I accidentally sort of Tokyo drifted sideways into this whole industry. Exactly. Before I Shutoku Battle drifted sideways into this thing. It's there is a long and kind of shakily documented history of graphic design work in video games, and I think maybe the biggest one, at least amongst other graphic designers at least, is usually Ian Anderson from the Designers Republic, largely because the Designers Republic were tasked with doing all of the like branding and design work and stuff for the Wipeout series back in the day. Or at least the first three of them. I've talked about people like John Mashin and stuff that took up that series with Pure and Pulse on PSP and ran with a bunch of other, like that guy did, like the MotorStorm Vita game with the RC cars. He did the branding for like Drive Club and a bunch of other stuff for like other Sony Motorsport series. Anyway, point is, like, those are some of the more like visible people that have been like just pushing a lot of really hard like aesthetic forward stuff that is very you know, easily shareable on social media, the stuff that people get really into.
No, but their website is super cool.
Probably. Speaking of NFTs, Ian Anderson and I got in a little bit of a spat some years ago on the internet. Because he got really, really into those, and he is, I don't think he would disagree if I said he has a bit of an infamously gigantic ego, and is incapable of, being wrong about things. So he got really into NFTs, and everyone yelled at him, and he dug his heels in, and, I don't know, I blocked him, a bunch of other people I knew blocked him, etc. So I, no idea what happened to him after that. As far as I know, he fell off the face of the earth some years ago because he started acting like a Tory because he got old and became the thing he hated. Anyway, the actual person that I want to shout out the work of is someone who is much more influential, I think, just because of how early and how prominent their work was. And that is Evelyn Seto from Atari in the 70s. A lot of her work is highlighted pretty well throughout the Atari 50 collection. Speaking of Digital Eclipse, from last episode,
years ago.
Yeah. When we mentioned their, Wizardry remake. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff in Atari 50 that is, highlighting a lot of Evelyn Seto's work because she did a lot of work. She was not the first, artist on staff there, but she was the kind of main one. Like, she did not design the original, like, idea of the Atari logo, but she did make it into the version of it that you see on everything today and have seen since the 70s. Basically, everything after the Pong cabinet, I believe, is... it would be after... Okay, there was one other or two other like very, very brief holdover Syzygy Atari logos in there that they had for a little bit. But the actual like normal ass Atari logo that we think of today, the little volcano, is her doing, as well as a lot of illustration and artwork and packaging design. And I think a lot of what Atari did so well and why there have been so many like collections of art books and stuff over the years is just pushing that stuff really hard. Like they took their product photography and illustration and layout work and overall just graphic design sensibilities very, very seriously. And I think a lot of their first party stuff is visually really, really successful and set the kind of bar for standardized like branded packaging for like a particular like console platform in the way that we kind of think of today. Very, very early on when those ideas were still pretty new. Yeah, I don't know. I just, she did a lot of work that you would recognize if you've been in and around games for very long at all, and has not gotten a tremendous amount of due credit over the years, I don't think. Going through the old, I have one other tab open right now where I'm scrolling through a bunch of like pics from the old like Atari office days and stuff, and just like everyone in that art department had such like incredibly hard fits and jackets and stuff going around.
But I'm also looking at the same photos. Yeah, she's got some she's got some sweet hair, you know, that's some long flowing hair, but then the men either have large hair or losing their hair
or gigantic glasses.
Yeah,
it's great. But I'm glad that she was able to come sit down in front of a camera at Digital Eclipse and talk about a lot of this stuff and get a lot of kind of firsthand account of her experiences working there out, kind of in a little more of a kind of publicly documented format, I guess. But generally speaking, I don't know. I don't have a ton to say necessarily. I didn't like come prepared with an essay for you or whatever, but
no, that's okay. As you were talking, I'm Googling, which is, people love that on podcasts when one person just Googling and looking at things on the internet and the other person
reading
talking.
A Wikipedia article into a microphone is always the best way to go.
Looking at her, looking at these old photos of Atari and all that old design work and all that stuff. I mean, like, it's funny, like, how obviously it is like a retro look to us now and everything, but it is still such a clean and intricate design, like style. Like, I mean, you can kind of see that in, you have history as well, but like with Bungie and Destiny, like some of their like icons and all that stuff, the Wipeout side of things and all, like there is like an art.
Oh yeah.
To
we
it.
Had like, to be clear, we had TDR posters on the wall, like in the office when we're absolutely all a bunch of Wipeout dorks, in terms of what used to make up the, Bungie design department.
Mm, yeah.
But like, absolutely.
It is art in and of itself, you know, like it isn't just like somebody like drawing boxes and squares and boundary lines and things like that for like animated art or like rendered like pixels and polygons and things like that. Like it's got really cool design work. And I mean, you're just seeing all this stuff up, like, you know, on posters and promotional ads and, you know, cabinets and game cases and stuff like that. Like, it's neat. I mean, it's not a job I would ever be able to have. I don't have an eye for looking at things like that, but clearly people do, and I'm curious to read more about her. I've pulled up in a couple of tabs just to kind of read about her life a little bit here once we get done wrapping this, but that's cool.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's important also to recognize like a lot of the like, I mean, there is the obvious like progression stuff, all of this kind of aesthetic direction and visual identity of, I mean, Atari basically was video games for a while in the 70s there, you know, functionally, and to have so much of that globally visually defined by a woman of color in the 70s is a big deal, I think, in America. But it's also just the fact that they were doing all this stuff pre-computer, so it's all doing all of the layout and shape work by hand, all of the stuff that I would do now with vectors in Adobe Illustrator really quickly, quickly in quotes, because it's Illustrator and it's going to be crashing and exploding at all times, but stuff like that would be so much more time intensive and laborious to do on paper by hand with that kind of machinery that they were using, and to be combining the like really intricate paint work that was done by a lot of the illustrators that I kept either on contract or on staff or whatever. And to be able to like get that stuff in a couple different visual styles based on the different like artists that they had, to be able to kind of fit unified under a sort of visual language and like packaging system is a really tough problem to solve. And also just there's the, I mean, the reason that they were called Atari and everything is like that was an age where making your electronics company sound Japanese was an economically good idea. But they also still had to like play with that whole, like, they had to balance that with the weird, like, Made in America spirit. Like, it's a very strange sense of identity that Atari carried through their very chaotic days through the 70s and into the early 80s. I just think that Evelyn Sutto carried a lot of that company's, a lot of what endures about their history and legacy, I think, is carried on the back of her work, and I just want to shout her out whenever I can.
All right, well, that's cool. Do whatever the sentence is there that's grammatically correct. Yep. Do yourselves a favor, Google, research, dig into that classic Atari history there, and look into some of these folks. I mean, I guess Evelyn specifically, as Andrew called out, but a lot of talented folks here, you know, putting together some really rad stuff there. I will personally be reading more about him too. I got a couple tabs, like I said. So this is cool. This is exactly what I thought was going to happen. You're going to ring somebody that I've never heard of in my entire life, but clearly has been a part of the industry and influence that has obviously helped, you know, shape things to be where they're at even today. So it's cool to like, you know, dig back in and look at the history. So folks like you, Andrew, thank you for having an interest and desire to read about those things and memorize those things and know those things so you can talk to people like me and you know, kind of re-spark the kind of that same passion and creativity and all that stuff. Like, I definitely want to go back in time and look at this stuff. But cool, that's all we got. We did the thing. This is the that's the episode. That's the question. Wow. You answered it, and we finished it. I said it last time, minutes ago / weeks ago, but anything else you'd like to kind of plug or share, any other recommendations? Like if you're, you know, just giving us an Elmore recommendation on something we need to go watch, read, or play, what are you going to leave us with?
I think for plugs real quick, I'm Elmore.zone on Blue Sky, Mythic Resonance on YouTube. Whenever this comes out, I bet the video I've been working on for years is probably still not out yet, but I don't know, take a look, maybe it is. And then also we've relaunched, forgot to mention this last time, but my old music podcast, The Silent Discographer, with my buddy Adam Ismail from The Drive, and on and off again racing game podcast we do called Time Extent, as well as Andre from Fine Time, friend of the show, over here. We have been over there talking about music, and we've been going through the discography of REM currently, and I am slowly working my way through getting those edited and posted. So that's the other thing I got going there that I forgot to mention last time, I guess. As far as recommendations, the first thing that jumped to my mind is extremely sick old Shaw Brothers movie called The Eight Diagram Pole Fighter. If you want some extremely sick artsy kung fu stuff, go watch The Eight Diagram Pole Fighter. There we go.
Well, thank you, Andrew. We will open invite, of course. Welcome back anytime. I'll probably craft up some new questions and try and freshen it up.
You know, I'm happy to crash a car through your wall whenever.
All right. Well, thank you, Andrew. You have a great rest of your day, and thanks everybody for listening. Goodbye.
You as well. Take care.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.